At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And here we go. It's the patented Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. Hope everybody's doing very, very well. Listen, an old friend of mine went bald years ago, but he still carries his comb with him. He just can't part with it. Thank you very much.
So... Thank you, Duff, man. Applauding the effort and the consistency and the commitment to delivering a joke every single Friday. Thank you, sir. And we're all looking forward to seeing Duff and the Guns on the road later this summer. They're doing stadiums, arenas, full capacity crowds starting on July 31st in Pennsylvania. Now, Fozzy is also hitting the road to full capacity crowds. Save the World Tour begins September 2nd. We've got some festival shows before then as well. You can get tickets at FozzyRock.com. Come out and rock with Fozzy. July 14th, Iowa City at Wildwood. July 15th, Cadot Rockfest with Anthrax. And Rob Zombie is on that. July 17th, Jacksonville, Florida at the Taco Festival. August 7th, Sheboygan at Brat Days. And then we start in earnest September 2nd, Columbus, Ohio. September 3rd, Joliet, Illinois. September 4th, Belvedere. September 6th, Kansasville, Wisconsin. September 9th, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. September 10th, the Blue Ridge Rock Fest in Appomattox, Virginia. And they go on and on and on all the way to Orlando October the 9th, the Earth Day birthday. And also, don't forget to check out all the great shows coming up in the UK and Ireland and Northern Ireland. That begins on November 30th. All the information is at Fozzy Rock. Don't forget to check out the VIP experience. It's the best one you'll ever have. We do a mini concert before the show of songs that you might not hear later on. We have a great time. So go check that out, FozzyRock.com, and check out the Winnipeggers on YouTube and Facebook, on my Facebook page. Racking up the views. New episodes every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. We talk about the all-night drive-in this week. You'll hear our tricks for sneaking in alcohol and people in the cars back in the day. We got a different special guest every week as well. Come see who's making appearances and have a laugh and a drink with me, Dave, and Ribo, the Winnipeggers, Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern on my Facebook page and YouTube channel. All right, today, it's the return of the classic album Clash. This time, we're talking about Rat. We got Out of the Cellar versus Invasion of Your Privacy, and here to take part in the debate and track-by-track analysis are Tom and Zeus from the Shout It Out Loud podcast. I've been on their show many, many times. Glad to have them reciprocate. They also brought along their friend, Sonny Pooney, just to prove he's a real person. Sonny Pooney, that's a made-up name. Sonny's here, though, and he's awesome. Zeus, Tom, Sonny, and I break down both albums, the artwork, the covers, the production, recording, songwriting. We've got stories and trivia about the guys and the songs, our experiences with them live. We'll talk about what we think, why we think Rat never made it as big as Motley Crue or Bon Jovi or Poison, who we talk about on their show this week. Lots of great stuff coming up and a lot of laughs. The classic album Clash returns, and it's Rat. Starting now, Talk is Jericho. We've been working on this for a long time here. And it's great to have Tom and Zeus from the Shout Out Loud podcast here on Talk Is Jericho for the classic album Clash. And Sonny Pooney, jeez Louise, you've been avoiding me on every podcast. I always do podcasts hoping that you'll be there and you never show up.
I'm glad I could finally make it. Thank you for continuing to invite me. And I do so apologize for past indiscretions.
It's so funny. Just to, for some reason, whenever you got, when I started listening to Shout Out Loud guys, before I even knew you guys, he was over there with someone, our friend Sonny Pooney, Sonny Pooney. I'm like, that's not a real name.
That's not real.
It's a real name. It's a real guy, and he's really here. I mean, really this is a meeting that who could have ever predicted this would have ever happened?
Yeah, and I've been going off on Sonny Pooney with a piece of shit, but I'm saying that in jest. And then he really greases the wheels by wearing a quarantine shirt here.
Like that? The biggest kiss ass we know right there. Unbelievable.
He's now gone from my least favorite to my favorite out of all everybody on this podcast
now. All right. For now, we'll see.
Well, I think Zeus has pretty much gotten his spot at the bottom, all locked in as always.
What the did I do that now I'm at the bottom? I got a Nirvana shirt on. Come on.
No, that's not helping.
We are we're here for another series in the very much anticipated and appreciated classic album Clash. And this all spurred when I heard you guys do album reviews on your podcast as well. And you did Rat Detonator, which at that point in time, I was one of the guys, I think Sonny said the same, that had dropped out of Rat at that point in time. It was very, very early on too, 1990 or so. But going back and kind of listening to your guys' review, I realized there's some pretty cool stuff on that record. But were you guys, Tom and Zeus, stalwart Rat fans from the start all the way through? Or was there a certain era of Rat for you guys?
Yeah, I will say this. I picked Detonator. That was my album. So we each get a pick. We take it's a rotation. Sonny's on the album review crew with us. I took Detonator because I love that album. It's kind of a forgotten album. And I know you're a big fan of Desmond Child.
Yes.
And he's all over that. So producing, he wrote every song on it. And it's kind of like a Bon Jovi Rat, not as sleazy, more popish metal. And there's some great tunes on there. And I love it. And we kind of want to get out of like, hey, let's review Out of the Cellar, like everybody else has when they think of Rat,
like we are today. No, because we're doing, just to tell everybody, I didn't even explain my own freaking show. Today it's Out of the Cellar versus Invasion of Your Privacy, which that's pretty much the 1-2 punch of Rat. Not that they didn't have other great tunes and other great records. That's what we're talking about, Detonator. So we can jump back into that time frame of it. Because I think, Sonny, you said that you got into Rat kind of in the beginning of their career, and then each record kind of got a little bit further and further out of them.
Yeah, I'm an MTV kid. So Round and Round, Lay It Down, You're in Love, they're all over MTV, Wanted Man. So I'm getting into Rat. I grew up in the Northern California, so I'm on the West Coast. And to me, every album that went by, it was just a little bit less. I was kind of a little bit less into it. And I think part of it had to do with Dickinson entered my life, and Scorpions entered my life, and Judas Priest entered my life. So I was, I guess, putting attention elsewhere.
Tom, how about you?
Yeah, my relationship with Rat is kind of weird, because when Out of the Cellar came out, you know, I was an MTV kid. I was only about 10 years old. I hadn't even quite turned 11, which is funny thinking about what an 11-year-old is listening to now. But at time, when Out of the Cellar came out, I was listening to AC/DC, Judas Priest, Ozzy, Motley Crue, Van Halen, Rush. I was still on the Kiss kick. Out of the Cellar came out, and I was like, I was a hits guy for Rat for a lot of their career, you know, including Detonator. I knew Detonator. I knew the hits. Out of the Cellar, I was really into that album, Invasion of Your Privacy. I started to drift off, but I was a hits guy. After that, a lot of those other albums, Dance Undercover, the hits. And then after that, I kind of really fell off the map. My taste changed, and some different bands entered my life. I really got hooked on Tesla, things like that. But it's funny because as I've gotten older, I find myself reverting more back to Rat albums, deep cuts, than I did when I was younger, where I find myself listening to Rat much more frequently than a band like Motley Crue or, you know, or Judas Priest, things like that. Rat, I don't know what that says about me as a fan. I mean, I never saw them in their heyday. I've seen them three times in the last 5 years. Of course, it's not the, you know, it's not the original Rat, but they still sound great and they're still playing all the great hits. So
it's interesting to me because you forget, like, so I got into the real metal scene kind of when it was all out, because I'm a couple of years older. I'm not sure how old Sonny is, but so I was 13, 14 when this barrage of metal, that's how I got into Kiss. You guys know the story with the Animalize record, and very much into Iron Maiden, and then Motley Crue came out, and Rat was right in there with them. And I forgot just how big Rat was at that time frame, from about 84 to 86. Like, Rat was just as big as Motley Crue or Judas Priest. I remember, like, it was always about, it was Warren DeMartini versus Glenn Tipton. You know, the Mick Mars wasn't even in the conversation. Like, where I grew up in Winnipeg, Rat was massive. And the funny thing was, Rat never came to Winnipeg. They're one of those bands like Ronnie James Dio who were doing arenas everywhere else, excuse me, but just never came past Winnipeg. So we never really got to see them, which kind of made them almost even more mythical. And for me, these two records are like two bona fide classic albums. In that, and the rule that we have on this show is we admit that both albums are great, and we're not pitting the two against each other in a detrimental way, but we're just kind of having a little conversation about the two records. And both of these, I think, are just at the top of the food chain. And almost like Sonny said, after this, they went from 10 great songs to 8, and then it was 6, and then it was, well, Shame, Shame, Shame's pretty badass. And then, you know, they kind of just disappeared into the ether when everything else started.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into it, obviously, when we do the track by track. But for me, and I'd be interested to see what everybody else thinks, I think there's a discernible difference between these two albums. I think they're closer to each other than as you move on further down their catalog. But I think there's a couple of songs on Invasion that might not have fit on Out of the Cellar. And I'm anxious to see if I'm the only one that feels that way when we get into the track by track. But yeah, you're right. Rat was massive. And I think we talked about this a little bit when we covered the Detonator album, that I think the one big thing that Rat missed out on, and I think they tried, was they didn't have that bona fide massive ballad like a Home Sweet Home to lift them into that stratosphere. They didn't have that. They tried a few times. I know they tried on Detonator, they tried on Invasion, and they tried a couple of times. They just never, because every band in that era had that massive ballad, that power ballad, whether it was Skid Row or obviously Kiss did it a bunch of times. Rat just couldn't do that, and you kind of needed to do that to get yourself to that next tier. Rat was right here, but they were just a nail below bands like Def Leppard and Bon Jovi and Motley Crue, I think.
All right, Zeus, why do you think Rat didn't become as big as Motley Crue or Bon Jovi?
I think they were pretty consistent. I like all their albums going all the way through. So I was
still a big Rat fan all the way through.
So yeah, I liked them up to Detonator, and I was really excited when I heard the sound of Detonator. So I thought it was a little bit different. I know Bon Jovi was on that album as well. So I got really hooked because I was a big Bon Jovi fan. I like that type of metal. And the thing I think was the different with Rat was, as Rat was still consistently hitting their albums, still probably getting gold and platinum records, their style of music went out. Robin Crosby is out of the band, then eventually dies, and then it's gone. But you got bands like Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, they were hitting their strides, getting maybe platinum albums, not triple or quadruple platinum albums like Motley Crue were, but they were consistent. But their music withstood this band, Nirvana, and the rest of them coming in and kicking their ass, whereas Rat didn't.
Right.
And they kind of fell off. And I think that's what it is. But now, anytime we get a chance, me and Tom, they're up in Hampton Beach. We're up there in New Hampshire. We're going to watch them play. And we love it. And we miss this. And these two albums, perfect example of how great that music was around 83 to about 91.
What do you think, Sonny?
Yeah, I think part of it is they almost peaked too early, right? Mm-hmm. You have to have something that keeps you going. And as the new hair metal bands are coming, Rat's less and less unique, right? You got another Warren DeMartini, another Warren DeMartini. And some would say some of those guys afterwards maybe took what Warren was doing and took it to the next level. And then the ballad's a killer because the ballad was keeping you on the charts. And you look at any charts in 86, 87, 88, 89, even Coverdale hit with ballads before he hit with rockers, right? So It's just when you're not going to be as unique, and I'm sure the infighting didn't help, right? Mm-hmm. I'm interested in knowing, and we'll never know this, but we know Juan has a great voice. Was there a possibility Juan could have done a ballad that hit the charts? Is there too much infighting to let that happen? Like, there's got to be something, just one or two things change.
You know what I think it is, not to interrupt you, but this is something that I analyze quite a lot about bands. This is what we do. We're music geeks. We always have been. And some people got into music and drifted away, and some of us got even more involved in it and stayed in it like all four of us here have. And I really analyzed Rat. I analyzed Anthrax the same way. And I always wondered, why was Anthrax the number four out of the big four when, in my opinion, they were right behind Metallica for many, many years? And I think one of the main reasons for them is they didn't have a bona fide guitar hero in Dan Spitz, who wasn't Kirk Hammett or Dave Mustaine or Kerry King. I think Rat didn't have a bona fide great frontman / lead singer. I think Stephen Piercy is very unique with his vocal. I don't think anybody sounds like him except for the guy from White Cross, the Christian Dead Ringer.
Yep.
But I also, too, when I finally did see Stephen and Rat, probably in the year 2000, it was very many years later, I was very underwhelmed. Like, this guy's got no rap, you know? And I think his personality, he's cool, man. He's too cool for school in the best possible way. But he doesn't have that Vince Neil, Janie Lane. I mean, you throw even Kevin Dubrow and Dee Snider. Those guys could grab you by the balls and get you involved in the show, whether you wanted to or not. And I think that might be one of the reasons why they never were able to get to that level and stay there longer if they did.
No, it's a good point. You're right, because he is, when you said he's too cool for school, he's so laid back and so in that kind of mode of, he's like the cool guy kind of hanging back, and that carries through on these albums, especially these first two albums, which I think is a great point. You needed, in that era, you needed that front man that could control the crowd and take over a show and take over an arena or an auditorium. You know, whether it's, you know, we said Vince Neil or Janie Lane or John Bon Jovi or any of those guys. But I think Sonny brought up a good point too about peaking too early. I mean,
yeah,
pretty much a lot. I mean, yeah, you know, people like Detonator and some of those other albums, Dance on the Cover, but most Rat fans are going to say one of these is their favorite album. And that's kind of really difficult, because a band like Motley Crue, they come out with, you know, Too Fast for Love, amazing. Shout at the Devil, amazing. They dipped a little for some people, Theater of Pain, and they came back, you know, they dipped a little bit with Girls, 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 and came, then Dr. Feelgood took over the world. So they were up and down. They kept their fans interested, I think.
But also, Tom, when you say they dipped down on theater, they also had two of their biggest hits in Smoking in the Boys' Room and Home Sweet Home. So the hardcores like us didn't like it, but the chicks, which is where it was all at back then, love those two tunes, and that's what put them into a legit arena headlining band.
Yep.
Yeah. Think about it. It happened to Quiet Riot also, right?
That's right.
Number one album, and then they basically disappeared off the face of the earth. If you could name five other songs that are not on that one album, it'd be a miracle.
Well, it's the same with Twisted Sister. It's even more so. After Stay Hungry, can you even name the next record? I mean, we can because we're nerds, but nobody else can, you know? Now, Zeus, let me ask you this before we get into the actual albums, because I know you're more of a Rat fan. Do you agree with us on this assessment of Stephen Piercy, or do you think that there's other reasons why they didn't get to stay on top longer?
Yeah, I agree. He's got that kind of voice that reminds me of Ozzy. You like his voice, it works with the band, but they're not getting emotional. He's not hitting a high note. He's not getting passionate. And you're right about being on stage. Think of all the lead singers back then, the charismatic frontman. I can't stand Brent Michaels. I think he's a terrible singer, but you know he's the man in charge.
Yeah.
When you see Rat, no offense, you see the goofy bassist guy jumping up and down, and he's distracting the shit out of you. And it but just stays his back. He's just sitting back. You know what he reminds me of a hockey goalie. You can't be the laid back guy as the hockey goalie. You can't be the laid back guy as the lead singer. You have to have a crazy personality because you're in that spotlight. That's what works. And, you know, I know he had his shtick about the ladies man being in Playgirl magazine and stuff, but you got to have a little bit more. You got to have more presence, stage presence.
Yeah.
Some personality thing.
Well, you mentioned that too when you're talking about Ozzy. If whatever limitations Ozzy has as a singer, go watch him live, even to this day. You know, he pours a bucket of water on you and go crazy. Let me see your cigarette lighters. And you don't give a shit what he sounds like. when you go to Rat and the goofy bass players doing this movement, probably by necessity, because no one else is moving. And the other thing too that I wanted to point out that we talked about briefly when you said the detonator was when they worked with Desmond Child, I think one of the reasons why it didn't work as well as it did with Bon Jovi and Kiss and Aerosmith and you name it, whoever, was Steven's voice didn't have that range and that emotional quality like you guys mentioned. So when they did do that ballad on it, I didn't buy it because it was just him still sounding like Steven Piercy trying to sing a ballad, and it didn't work for me.
Don't get me started.
But Chris, that's exactly the point. And I know that Giving Yourself Away was a hit, and I know that Zeus loves the song, and that's fine. But you kind of nailed the comments that Sonny and I were kind of in agreement on. It didn't sound believable. The song wasn't a bad song. I always thought it was just a bad Rat song. Because Rat doesn't come across as a ballad band to me. And I think that's obviously because of Steven's voice and the style of play that he has. But I think real quick, I think it's interesting that we're saying all these things about Rat that kind of didn't, you know, whether it's Steven's voice or his lack of stage presence, et cetera, et cetera. Look at all that we're saying and still how huge they were and how they are. And still how huge they are now breaking down two of their albums. Think of that.
That shows you
how great those songs are.
I wanted to bring it back around, and we're talking kind of a little bit of the detriments, but let's talk about the majesty of Rat. We'll go into these records because these two albums are two of the best of this era, and this band does kick ass. And like I said, at this time frame, they could do no wrong. The videos, and we'll talk about that and everything else, but we're going with Out of the Cellar, which was released March 27th, 1984, produced by Bo Hill, and we'll talk about these covers. The cover of this one has the recently departed Tawny Kitaen, who was very much involved in Rat because she was dating Robin Crosby. So we'll talk about that cover. And then the other Invasion of Your Privacy was June 13th, 1985, which is basically a year and 4 months later, whatever it was. Also produced by Bo Hill. And this has the lovely Marion Gravatt, another playmate who I think was also dating Robin Crosby at the time. So Steven Piercy might not be the ladies' man. It seems like Robin Crosby was getting all the chicks.
Yeah, these two album covers, I mean, obviously Out of the Cellar, because of Tawny Kitaen, you know, rest in peace. Unfortunately, that news just broke.
Yeah.
And people talk about, you know, the Invasion album. And in this is the era of having the hot chick on your cover. And it's funny because we're all Kiss fans, and Chris, that's how we got hooked up. We're all Kiss fans, and Kiss never did that. The closest thing we got to anything like these was Paul Stanley showing us his blue thong on the back of the Crazy Nights album cover. That's the closest lingerie shot we got on a Kiss album. And you look at these two album covers, and they're just iconic. They're fantastic, and they're timeless, and they're such a snapshot of the era.
I love the color schemes of the two. One is very orange and red, and the other one's very blue and kind of shaded nighttime. I also love back in those days, if you had a band called Rat, then you obviously had to have a name of a record that was related to a rat, so Out of the Cellar, and then you had to make the album cover that was an exact representation of that album title, Out of the Cellar.
not a lot of creativity. There's literally a cellar door opening.
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
And the other thing I want to point out before we get into you guys' favorite cover out of the two is that they pointed it out. I remember hearing it in the top right-hand corner of Invasion of Your Privacy. You actually see in the shadows, Sonny's looking at it right now, a camera. There's a camera up in the ceiling, which is, of course, invading Marianne's privacy. So, Sonny, what's your comments on these album covers, and which one do you think is better?
I think Tawny looks good on this cover, and I like the color scheme better, Out of the Cellar. But, dude, give me the voyeur Marianne camera in the bedroom. Like, this is the album cover I would have been selling during this album cover. Like,
that's right.
Invasion wins for me, no doubt.
What do you think, Zeus?
Both chicks are smoking. The thing about Out of the Cellar, I'm looking at it. Isn't she going into the cellar?
And this up backwards, you don't know.
Yeah, and this Invasion one, I mean, I think she's gorgeous. But that window open, it's a little creepy. especially when you're younger. It makes me think of, what's that movie, Salem's Lot?
Salem's Lot.
Totally.
Pop up in the air and invade. And I do like the color. It does look it, and it's kind of like we're all watching this chick change and stuff, and it's sexy enough. Doesn't have to get too crazy, and it's, you know, something your parents won't take away from you. So right. It worked.
But which one do you like better? You got to make a choice.
Oh, I'll take Invasion.
Invasion. All right. Tom?
Yeah. Look, we love Tawny Katane, but there's not a lot going on that album cover. That Invasion cover has it all. It's got that, you know, the voyeuristic kind of thing there, you know, sitting there, you know, in her bedroom, you know, looking just like a total smoke show, which she is. You got to go Invasion. With all due respect to Tawny, as great as she is.
Yeah, and that's one of those ones that you kind of even forget that Tawny's on the cover because she's so linked with Whitesnake. But yeah, Out of the Cellar is the one that more people know. But Invasion is the better cover from a visual standpoint, from an art direction standpoint. If you even want to start getting to the pretentiousness of art direction, a rat cover. And the last one for me is I love the socks she's putting on. There's something about those short socks that I always love because if you remember in ZZ Top Leg,
yes,
when she gets all hot, she's got the little short little socks, and I was like,
yeah.
So,
Chris, that is hilarious that you brought that up because I'm telling you right now, that is the cherry on top of that picture right there is the pose, and it's not just she's just doing a sexy pose; she's in the middle of pulling those on, and you're right. That's what the young guys wanted to see back then, and Rat didn't disappoint.
Or Tom, was she in the middle of taking them off?
Okay, perhaps.
Take it off. That's wrong. Oh, don't get us started.
I don't know. Exactly. Her head turned. I think she's like, "Hey, is Sonny walking in?"
No,
like, that's what I see here.
She'd be jumping out the window if she thought you were walking in. That's why the window's open.
She's walking out to the abyss.
Well, here we go, guys, and this is what people have been waiting for, and this is one of my favorite things, that we're doing the track-by-track debate. As we say, as you know, you have to choose a winner, but we discuss kind of in length of what's going on here, and we'll get right to it. So it kicks off Out of the Cellar with Wanted Man, which, of course, they did do a video for, which we can discuss, and that goes toe-to-toe with You're in Love. Two just great rockin'. They make it really hard. Because usually when you get to the track by track, that's where you really find the proof of the pudding. But they're putting all the best songs up against the best songs. So they're really taking us to task. Before we actually discuss, you know, which one's your favorite or whatever, let's talk about the videos for a bit. What do you remember about the video for each one of these, if you've seen them recently, guys?
All right, let me start on this one. What the? First of all, Wanted Man, they're like walk into some sort of like Western area.
It's a saloon.
Yeah, and then I think like Robin's like daydreaming or something, and next thing you know, they're five cowboys that wouldn't scare any real cowboy, and they're all dressed up, and then they go up against some other like gunslingers, and it's just so bad. The acting on it was so bad. When they walk on, they're like, "Hey, where are we?" And then he goes,
"It's a saloon." That's what Crosby. It's a saloon, and then Bobby was like, "The Wild West, man."
And Robin Crosby's voice sounds like Barry White. I don't know what the hell that was, but it's pretty bad.
Would you any retort to that, guys? Agreements, whatever.
Look, it came out in '84. It was of the time, you know, Wanted Man, you know, the Western, the saloon. They tried to do something because a lot of their other more popular videos are performance-based, you know, strictly performance-based videos. I thought it was creative. I think it was kind of neat that there was like a story and a little theme to it. I mean, of course, it's hokey looking back at it all these years later. But I'm sure at the time it was, oh, this is kind of cool, like this new band, this new album, you know, what are these guys up to? But again, with the hindsight that we have, it's like, ah, come on, guys.
It's supposed to be hokey. Like,
exactly.
It's not Casablanca. It's supposed to be a little weird. It's supposed to be a little spaghetti Western. I think it's cool.
Yeah, me too.
You forget about the beginning part, though, where they actually, they're on the bus and like somebody pulls like a worm from behind his ear. You guys remember that? And they, like,
Stephen Pearson. Worm.
I'm hoping it was some kind of a gummy bear or something. But then they get their gold record for 500,000 copies sold. And like all the chicks are meeting with at the meet and greets, and then they end up, their bus breaks down, and they end up in the Wild West. And why wouldn't you?
Yeah. I do want to bring up one thing. When I saw this on Wikipedia, they described the video like this. Band members end up getting into a gunfight with another gang of cowboys who are also up to no good. like the Fresh Prince. Like, what the fuck is that?
The Fresh Prince. Hey, give them credit. They tried to do something.
They did. I'm sure they had a great time with it. But if you're talking about the tunes, like I said, Wanted Man, it's a great opening riff. It's such a great song. And I would totally take that, except for, in my opinion, it gets eclipsed by one of the top three Rat songs of You're in Love, with one of the best opening album riffs and A Strip of Lightning. And they got that, like, even though that's thunder, I get it, but it's just so cool. And that video is more of a live performance, interspersed with stupid little cartoons of, you know, squirrels in love, or whatever the fuck it was. But to me, I gotta go with You're in Love, the solo Warren DeMartini. And also too, they talk about the groove of the Blots, and the Blots is a terrible nickname.
It's terrible.
He does have a certain style and feel to him. He reminds me a lot of Steven Adler on Appetite. You can't say that he's the best drummer, or that he's, you know, the most technical drummer, but there's something about that groove that he brings to Rat that nobody can really replace. And I think it's a perfect example of that on You're in Love.
Chris, I'm glad you brought that up, because I had something written down about Bobby Blotzer. And when you talk about Rat, you talk about the guitarists for good reason, Warren and Robin, and you talk about Steven's vocals. Bobby Blotzer is, especially on, for me, Out of the Cellar, but in general, tremendously underrated on some of these songs. And mm-hmm. I have some specific comments as we get into the songs, but I'm glad you brought that up, because he deserves major credit on both of these records, because he dominates on some of these songs, I think. And then every time we do on our album review crew episodes, when we do our bonus episodes, I always focus on the drums, because that's always my thing. I love the guitarist, but the drums, I'm always have my ear tuned. And Bobby Blotzer just kind of rips it up on these albums.
So which tune do you choose out of the two?
For me, when I first looked at it, I'm like, this is going to be difficult, because You're in Love is so iconic. But for me, Wanted Man is iconic, quintessential Rat. It starts off with just one of the most kick-ass grooves and riffs ever. And then it just goes into that sleazy Rat slow vibe. It's perfectly written for Stephen Piercy's voice. It's what I want from a Rat song. It's not too slow, and it's not fast. I like fast Rat, but You're in Love, it's great. But Wanted Man is just iconic. And for me, it gets extra points because it was in the movie Weird Science. So right there, that's the tiebreaker for me. But Wanted Man by far.
What do you think, Sonny?
This was the tough one for me, because two incredible opening tracks, there's no doubt. And I changed my mind 6 times over the last 3 or 4 days, right? But this morning I woke up and I'm all, I'm like, I think I'm gonna have to go with You're in Love, because yeah, it has a better solo, and I think I like the pace a little bit better. But man, I am a sucker for those cowboy themed rock songs, like modern day cowboy. Yeah, I'm a sucker for those. It was really hard for me to choose against Wanted Man, but I'm going with You're in Love.
I'll say, when we did the Jericho Cruise last year, we always do a cover set, because we play 3 times, so we switch it up every night. And the cover set last year, we did You're in Love. And we got Steve Brown to come join us for the solo, because it was just like, this is killer, man. Like, I want to do this again. So what do you think, Zeus?
All right. So for me, you're absolutely, I'm going to echo your sentiments. Great songs, both of them. What a way to open up an album. Yes. Riffs kick ass. Now, that's how you open an album. Now, for me, Wanted Man solo is the better solo. It kicks, and it builds and builds, and then he just explodes. But You're in Love is the better song. The videos, damn, the video's better. Warren looks so cool.
Yeah.
When you watch it, the two, it's like a quintessential 80s band. The two guitarists, I know Steven's not doing much other than those little yoga kicks he tries to do.
Little spinning.
Yeah, and Warren Boucher is literally like, he just looks like a buffoon, but God bless him, he tries. But Warren, at one point when he does his solo, he's like up on a stage, he's got one leg down, one leg up, his guitar's up like this, you can see his fingers moving, going nuts. I'm like, when I was young and I remember that video, I'm like, oh man, that would be so cool to be that guy and playing that. And it's got so much balls on it. God bless him. I'm going to take You're in Love.
Good. I love it. I'm on an island. I'll take it.
All right. All right. Well, that's fine. Like I said, both these songs are great. So. And then the next one is another perfect example of two amazing songs that if they weren't up against each other would be easy picks from either way. But it's You're in Trouble versus Never Use Love. So You're in Love on the first or the second record, and now You're in Trouble. So they went to both sides of the coin there. Zeus, why don't you start off and let us know what you think about these two tunes and which one you like better?
You're in Trouble comes off with a little bass in the beginning. Boom, 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 boom. You know, I like it. It's a good song. Both of these songs are pretty good. But again, surprisingly, I like the riff better on Never Use Love. And, you know, when push comes to shove, I'll be pushing you down. Stupid things like that stick with me. And I love that. And it's just, and just his sleazy vocals, the way Steven hits that, I love it. And it's one of the things that I want to bring up is like, if you notice the theme in the lyrics with Rat, they're kind of like Bon Jovi-ish too back then. There's no sorcery.
Yeah.
There's no politics. There's no politics. It's always about like some woman did him wrong or he's going to get some sluts tonight. That's it. That's what they were doing. And
no post-apocalyptic themes, nothing. Just going out to pick up chicks. That's all we got.
It's not about peace cells. It's not about any of that shit. Yeah. It's about like he's going to try to score and this girl's dirty, but he's going to get her. Like that's it. And, you know, as far as these two songs go, I'm going to take Never Use Love.
This is why I love the classic album Clash, because every time You're in Trouble comes on, I'm like, this is the best. Like we talked about earlier, kind of that slow, sleazy. It's a great chorus. It's a great verse. And then in preparation, I put on Invasion and Never Use Love came on. And that song is, dude, Warren's tone. I'm assuming it's Warren. And I'm sure both guys, if it was Robin's tone, because I think Robin might have even had a hand in writing Never Use Love. No, he didn't. That's all Stephen Piercy. So anyways, the tone on that is just insanely crisp and clean. And the soul is great, but I just love that chorus with the band. Never use love. Like, just got the other guy behind it, and dude, like, that's one of those ones that could have been a single, maybe should have been a single if they had a third one. And as great as You're in Trouble is, and it's always one of my go-tos on this record, I'm taking Never Use Love as well. All right, Tom, what do you think?
All right. So speaking of guitar tones, I'm glad you brought this up because you keep jumping on some of the things I have written down, which is good. So for me, we've talked about this on some of our other bonus episodes that we've done. So for the 80s, my three favorite guitar tones of that era is Randy Rhoads on Blizzard of Oz, George Lynch on Back for the Attack, and Warren DeMartini on Out of the Cellar. And whenever there is a tiebreaker for a song here, I always find myself leaning a little bit to Out of the Cellar. Now, Never Use Love is an unbelievable song. I love how it opens up. It's got a heavy and aggressive riff, and then it kicks into like an awesome groove. And I'm going to have to disagree with you here respectfully, Jericho. For me, the chorus is what sinks this song.
Okay.
The chorus is what sinks this song. Now, You're in Trouble, Zeus mentioned it. It has an interesting kind of opening, kind of like a tribal beat. There's not much going on. But when the song shifts gears and that riff kicks in, I'm sold. I am so into it. And that chorus, and the way Stephen Piercy sings some of these words, he makes you think that you're really in trouble. you're in trouble and you believe it. And that's what I'm going with.
That's a great point, though. And I do have to point out what Zeus said, too, and that when push comes to shove, I'll be pushing you down.
Yeah.
I first heard this record in 1985, and I could pinpoint that lyric for 36 years since, you know? But I know what you're talking about, too, like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, you're in trouble. He's got that grit and balls to his voice, which we mentioned earlier. Nobody sounds like that, and he really does have that little bit of a rough edge to him, you know?
I love it. Yep.
Hey, real quick. You're in trouble. Is it like someone's in trouble or are they pregnant? I never understood that. Is he saying you're in trouble like you're pregnant? Like that expression?
I don't know.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, because you can read the lyrics and you're still like, what the f*** is he talking about? So,
ambiguous.
Who knows?
What do you think, Sonny?
So let's talk about guitar tone for a second. So I listened to this Bo Hill interview, and he was talking about they didn't have much money on the first album. So Robin and Warren shared a rig, and Warren absolutely hated that. So on tour for Out of the Cellar, he's picking up rigs along the way. And now he's got like 20, 25 rigs. They bring them into the recording sessions, puts them all together. They have the studio for the day. He's going deaf, listening to all this stuff. Bo goes to his guitar tech and says, hey, bring out the old rig, hook that up one, two, and let's see if he likes it. He goes, yeah, this is the one. This is the one right here. And it was the same rig they used in Out of the Cellar. All those rigs they had didn't matter. Yep. I like the pace of Never Use Love more. But Deuce had brought it up. These little stupid things that us music nerds love. That little guitar screech thing that happens at 34 seconds and you're in trouble. Like, I look forward to it. It's like the bad note that Ace hits during the Rip It Out solo, Live Plus One. He goes, eh. Like, for some reason, I wait for that to happen even when I'm driving. So just because of that, and then the hey, hey during the guitar solo.
Love that.
And then oh, my God, I got to go with You're in Trouble.
Nice. You're such a teaser. You give me life. I live in jungles and live with knives. There's always trouble on your mind. And won't you make me draw the line? I don't think that's about someone who's pregnant. Somehow he's in some kind of a fight. Now we come down to another huge battle of the classic of all classics, Round and Round. If it was up against any other song, but then Lay It Down. Once again, it's just that. Something about that tune that's there's something very special to that, obviously, because it was a single as well. So, Tom, you want to start this one off?
Oh, yeah, you're right. They keep matching up these iconic tunes against each other, not making it easy. Look, I think most people would agree this could be a coin flip. I know everybody has a favorite. I know Round and Round for a lot of people out there is going to suffer from fatigue. It's the most overplayed Rat song. You know, everybody hears it. They play it everywhere. Lay It Down. It's got that slow Rat sleaze to it, that slow groove. But for me, I know I've been hearing Round and Round nonstop for, you know, almost 40 years now. It's a perfect Rat song. It's the perfect tempo. It's not too fast. It's not too slow. I'm going Round and Round on this one. I'm not going to get crazy. I'm going Round and Round. But that being said, ask me this tomorrow. I could take Lay It Down. But right now it's Round and Round.
What do you say, Sonny?
This one was tough also. I'll tell you, I like the Lay It Down video. Because the little Steven, dude, he's killing me, right? Oh, he's on the groove in the video, right? Totally off beat, too. I'm like, dude, what is going on? And then there's something about Milton Berle. Like, okay, so it's 1984. I'm 15 years old. Is Milton Berle supposed to mean something to me? Like, I remember seeing him going, I know that guy. And then I figured out he was Louis the Lilac in the Batman series on a couple of episodes. That's the only reason I even knew who the guy was. So I don't know who they were trying to, like, I know, I'm a nerd. I'm sorry.
But that's why you're here. That's why you're here.
Right? Both songs are awesome. I think the guitar solo, Lay It Down, to me, is even a little bit better. But Round and Round, dude, that pre-chorus, I sing it every time along with them. Heard the song 20 million times, and I'll hear it 20 million more. I had to go with Round and Round at the end.
Yep.
You know what's funny, Sonny, because, and that is great, by the way, and I'll get to Milton Berle, but I remember if you guys ever saw the movie The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke, which was just an incredible movie. And the reason why, it wasn't because of the wrestling, it's because of just the guy, his dreams had passed him by. And when he hears Round and Round in the bar with the stripper, whose dreams had also passed her by, that was their connection. Like, this song, anybody that grew up in our era, you know this song. This is a Switzerland song. You can put this on at any party and everyone's going to know it, right? Because of just how huge it is. And the video, I remember this, kind of the opposite of what you said, Sonny. Like, I knew exactly who Milton Berle was. And of course, who he, like, and my reaction was like, why the f*** is Milton Berle in this?
Like,
and he's super overacting and he's dressed as a chick. Like, this, like, what is he doing here? He doesn't fit in with any of this.
It's so odd, especially more revisionist history. When you watch it now, you're like, what the hell were you doing? Like, what? Like, yeah, we know that, there's a relationship there, yeah. But why did you think that that was going to help you sell anything?
Yeah, so his nephew was the original manager of Rat, Marshall Burl.
Yeah.
Who was in the Wanted Man video, by the way. Who's the cheesy-looking guy that was holding the cards? Mm-hmm. He's talking about nerds. But to me, like, listen, I could go Muso here and say that the riff for Lay It Down is better than the riff for Round and Round, and the solo for Lay It Down is better than the solo for Round and Round, to a point. But that harmony solo in Round and Round with Robin and Warren is great. It's one of the most perfectly written solos ever. So, yes, Lay It Down is 9.992, and Round and Round is a 10 all across the board. I don't think you can have a, much like Heaven's on Fire, in my opinion, it's the perfectly written song for that era, Round and Round. Zeus?
Again, it sucks for Lay It Down that it goes up against Round and Round. I think both of those videos are kind of iconic, right? Yeah. The girl in that video is the same girl, isn't it, from on the cover?
Yes.
It's the same playmate. And she's
Yep.
Yeah, and she's smoking. The riff is incredible on Lay It Down. The solo's great. But how do you go wrong with Round and Round? It's so iconic. Just think about it this way. When you think about Warren falling through the ceiling and landing on the the table, doing his solo, and just I can remember the part when he just points up to Robin, and then Robin does a little, then it goes back. Like, yeah, we're all like feeling that because you remember seeing that as a kid. And then even the guy getting dressed up at the end with the goth makeup, the butler. And now you watch the video and you're like, oh, he was in on it the whole time. Yeah. He was winking at them to go by and stuff. Things like that you pick up. The girl on there is, I don't know. She's she looks a little Annie Lennox. I don't think she was too hot.
Kind of like ripping through like some kind of like, weird
like
curtain or something. Cocoon or something.
Yeah.
I just... You know,
but you know what, Zeus, not to interrupt you, but it's little stuff like that that we remember to this day. It's not the like giant effects or anything like that. It's just the fact he lands on the table. He points up at his other buddy who then just starts a solo. Like, you don't forget shit like that. That's great shit. Man.
No, that solo is just so incredible. And then that's the quintessential, like the way they look, the way they move. And like Steven Piercy's outfit. Like, I picture that outfit for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
And he's got those, I don't know if he stole it from Shawn Michaels, the Rockers gear that he's wearing. He's not wearing leather, but he's wearing those like wrestler pants. And the rest of his career, he's always wearing them. I never really see him in leather. He's always got those kind of spandex kind of on. And that look where his hair's all over his face. And you're like, how the hell is he supposed to see like that? And then the dual guitar tag, going back and forth, the swaying. Juan being a buffoon, you know, it's way too iconic. I got to go Round and Round.
They look like pirates. They kind of had a gimmick of like pirate rock, you know?
Yes.
They did. Like they the spandex was ripped with other spandex behind it. And then Warren is like, just like this giant kid. I love Robin. And I love the fact that he's banging Tawny Kitaen. So yeah, I'll bring my girlfriend into the cover and in the video, which we'll talk about. Then he dumps her and then brings in Marion Gravatt, another Playboy playmate. Yeah, I'll put her in the cover or in the video. And then, you know, for the Dance, Dance, Dance album, I guess he didn't have a girlfriend at the time because there was no chick on the cover of that one.
Oh, it was just Steven Piercy smoking a butt.
All right. In Your Direction, also written solely by Steven Piercy, versus Give It All by Crosby and Piercy. I'll start this one. Now we sort of get kind of into the album tracks of the record, and In Your Direction has got that really cool burn out now Give It All's pretty cool too, but I think I've gone pretty much gonna have to give it to In Your Direction just because I just like the Have It Your Way. With that killer riff behind it, and but Give It All's pretty good too. But in this moment, I'm going with In Your Direction. What do you think, Tom? Take it.
Yeah, this is an easy one for me because I'll just tell you right now, In Your Direction is my favorite Rat song.
Mm.
Yeah, it's my favorite Rat song.
Why?
Yeah, well, because this song, it has everything I love about Rat in it. Okay, it starts off when it starts off with that riff, okay, it's got the riff, and then the other guitar, it has like those the ringing chords in the background. It's like wing, 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 while the riff is going, and then when it shifts gears into the main riff that you were just playing, that to me, that is my favorite Rat riff. That is one of my favorite '80s riffs. It is so aggressive and so gnarly, and the guitar tones just carry it. And then you get into the verses, and it kind of shifts gears a little bit, and then it kicks back in for the chorus, you know, In Your Direction. I just think it brings everything together for me, what I love about Rat. And I just, every time I hear this song, I listen to it start to finish. It's easily In Your Direction. Give It All is okay, but it's got no chance for me against In Your Direction.
All right. Zeus.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Give It All.
Nice.
In the battle of bad lyrics, In Your Direction, abusing you all across the country, said I feel hot coals. What? And then you got, on the other side, she came behind and then showed me her thighs. You know what I mean.
Thanks, Stephen. No, we didn't know what you
meant. We don't know what you mean.
Tell us more.
Both of them have good riffs. I love, you can tell the guitars on both of these songs, the dual guitars.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I like about Rat and their sound. You know, Robin gives you that nice chord, and then Warren always comes in, does that nice, like, lead work and the, you know, the fills that he does. And there's something about his guitar playing's very George Lynch, and the two of them, my favorite from that era, and Randy Rhoads. Good call, Tom.
Yep.
But he holds a note, and he gives it that melody, that feeling, and it just, I can't explain it. He just knows how to hit a note on a solo. And it just, it moves me. I like the chorus on Give It All in the background, the backing vocals back and repeating it back. Give It All. I just, to me, that's the better song. Although they're both kind of equal, I think Give It All for me is better.
I didn't realize until recently just how many riffs Robin Crosby wrote. I just thought it was always, you know, Demartini. But Robin has his hand on most of the songs on both these records, or at least the lion's share of them. Sonny, what do you think?
So, Chris, you mentioned it In Your Direction being a Mickey Rat song, like it was an older song.
Yeah.
And in that interview with Bo Hill, he's talking about they had done them live so many times that the way Stephen was singing the melody wouldn't translate on record. So Bo would have to talk him through how he wanted the melody sang. So it kind of changed from what they were doing live. Well, then on the next record, Stephen didn't show up for a pre-production because he's like, well, Bo's going to change everything I'm going to do anyway. So he stopped showing up for pre-production. And I think it shows, because In Your Direction is a really good song and Give It All is not. There's just like Give It All to me would be a throwaway from the Out of the Cellar sessions. Like that's kind of what it feels to me. Now, that all being said, I'm choosing In Your Direction, but I've been waiting all week to tell Zeus, mm-hmm, I want to give you all my love tonight. Oh, jeez. Live on
Give It All. And that's the other thing. They start that whole thing of that 80s, you know, we're not gonna take it. And Shut Through the Heart, that drum stop. I mean, just drums, guitar stop, and the chorus, and the fist pumping metal. You know,
save that for later, Zeus. Save that for later.
There's a trifecta of that shit coming up.
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, yeah.
Right. But coming up right now, She Wants Money, written solely by Juan Cruchet, versus Closer to My Heart, which is another Crosby and Piercy song. And to me, this is the first easy, no hands down knockout punch. And I'll start it. I think that when we talked about Rat not having the ballad, I think they did have the ballad in Closer to My Heart. Closer to My Heart, yeah. And I don't know why they didn't release this as a single, because after Lay It Down and You're in Love, I think it would have fit in perfectly. And I just think it's a really well-written song. I think it's got a great chorus. It fits the vibe. It's not sappy. It's not wimpy. It's a heavy tune. It's got a little bit of a kicked in thing at the end there, a little bit of a you know, a one section, if you will. And She Wants Money is pretty much just a stock kind of tune, in my opinion. It's a good fifth song, first side closer. But to me, Closer to My Heart is one that slipped through the net, shall we say, and should have been a big hit for them that might have taken them to that next level that they already hadn't, well, they already attained that next level, might have kept them there for a little while longer.
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree, Chris.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, look, I'll be honest with you. Both of these, this is the first matchup where it's kind of slim pickings on both sides here. But as I said really? Earlier, yeah, I don't like the slow ballad attempts. Closer to My Heart is not, it's not bad. But I'm going to give She Wants Money the edge strictly because it's just got another killer riff. It's not a great song. I don't like that super fast rat, but it's got a good groove. It's got an awesome riff. It's got a really dumb chorus, you know, and it kind of reminds me of what's to come when we have to hear She Wants More by Slaughter off of Stick It To You, which is another Visa MasterCard. You know, like, give me a break. Like,
this one does have a lyric of quick change.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Oh, right.
Stole my line.
So for me, strictly because it's got a ballsy riff, I'm going to give She Wants Money the nod, but not by much.
Well, you just don't like rat ballads then, Tom.
Well, that is true. Absolutely. That's true. Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
All right, Sonny, what do you think?
So, Chris, you said it was a well-written song, and I agree with you. And the reason you think that is because you already heard it. It's the second song on Out of the Cellar, Slower. So this is basically You're in Trouble, Slower. It's the same vocal phrase.
Closer to Your Heart?
Yeah.
Really?
If you listen to the two together, you'll get what I'm talking about.
Wow.
I sent it to these guys, and they're like, oh, my God, you're right. So I don't like the rap ballads either. I love She Wants Money.
Wow.
There is so many unique things on there. Like, if you listen real close, there's so many subtle guitar things he's doing after each verse is saying. And then that little bridge that's after the solo, before the last chorus, is very unique. That doesn't happen in a lot of songs.
Well, that she walks the streets at night alone. Yeah, that's a good part.
Yep. So, yeah, this was a total landslide for me. I love She Wants Money.
I'm going to have to go back and compare the two. You're in Trouble and One Step Closer to My Heart. Okay. Zeus, are you going to back me up on this, or am I an island today?
You're on an island, but slightly. But slightly. I do like Closer to My Heart. And I dig. I think Steven can pull these off. I think Closer to My Heart is probably, the bar is pretty low. But this is probably the deepest lyrics on both of these albums. This is probably the one that makes sense. He's actually, if you listen, read the lyrics and stuff, sounds like a pretty good ballad. It's not bad. Mm. I like the music on it. His voice is good. I don't know. I just She Wants Money. It's just so perfect for that era. And when you're right, when he says quick change, I'm thinking of him going spare change, like looking in the couch, throwing quarters at this woman. And just the whole scenario when he tells her, I no cash, she laughs, you gotta go. Like, come on. And that chorus, she wants money. Oh, you wanna play? You gotta pay. Yeah. Come on. Yeah. That's just awesome.
And just to throw some more dirt on my Closer to My Heart grave, it's not the way that you hold me. It's not that I really care. It's not to say that to love is to own me. You're tangled up in my lair.
Settle down, Stephen. Stop. Come on, man.
Tangled up in my lair? Tangled up in my web or caught in my lair?
Right.
All right. Let's go to the second side here. Lack of communication. Piercy Cruchet versus Between the Eyes, DeMartini and Piercy.
I'll take this one. So, look, this is a matchup where I feel bad for Between the Eyes because it deserves better, because I think Between the Eyes is awesome. I think it's a great song. I think I love it. It's got that classic rat groove, that sleazy slow groove. The song could have probably fit on Out of the Cellar, but it's going up against Lack of Communication. And for me, it's a knockout punch. And I like Between the Eyes, but Lack of Communication is just iconic. And when they play that song live, it just, when Steven just says back off and it just kicks into gear. Yeah. It's a great song. Lack of Communication easily here, but Between the Eyes deserves better.
Now let me ask you a question. This is going to tell you what my thought is exactly. I just literally listened to this record today in preparation. And I have, when I hit Between the Eyes, I thought that I actually went to the wrong album on Wikipedia. I completely don't have any idea how this song goes, and I just listened to it today. How does it go?
It's memorable.
How does it go? Honestly,
It's just, it's, you're going to make me sing?
No, I just hum it. How does it go? What's the chorus?
It starts off, it's like, dun, 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 dun,
oh,
dun,
yeah. Yeah. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. Yeah. And he's like, I don't like you.
Perfect. Perfect segue. Yep. I was just going to tell you, it's a whiny song.
Yes.
And that's why I don't like your hot and cold device. And then he even says, you hardly notice. Like, come on.
You hardly notice.
Yeah, exactly.
You whiny guy. It's
very whiny.
I like Zeus's interpretation of Stephen Pearcy with a Boston accent.
It's just, he's got this, you know, he's got that, it's a plotting song.
Yeah,
it's just, it's not good. How do you open up side two?
Great
with
point.
This song? That's just weak. That's just not a very good idea. Lack of communication, guys. That 5 second solo when he says back off and it just blisters out. I knew it's short, but we all remember that it's 5 seconds.
Yeah,
pure like craziness.
It reminds me, before you continue, it reminds me of that solo after the first verse in Battery. Battery. I always love when it's a solo stuffed in the middle of the first and second verse. So absolutely agree with you on that one, Zeus.
All right. One last thing. And you know, you've been mentioning that I'm the bigger of the Rat fan here. I am ashamed to say, because I actually looked at the lyrics while I was reviewing all this. All these years, I've been thinking they say lack of communication, lack of, not back off.
Back off. Yeah.
I never knew that. I thought he was just saying half the lyric, like lack of.
Yeah.
You know, but I just found that out. That riff is incredible. So it's obviously lack of communication for me.
Sonny, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't need Rat singing about social commentary. I'll tell you that much.
We said that earlier.
And, I am not the biggest Stephen Pearcy vocal fan. He's got a unique voice, no doubt. Lack of communication, to me, is his best vocal. This is where I like him the best, right? And I like that they kind of meshed him in with the backing vocals and the chorus is a little bit unique. And that whole back off, oh, my God. That's like, that's an earworm of all earworms. So, Chris, when I set up the playlist on Spotify, I set up the Autoseller song, then the Invasion song. Then the I finished listening to Lack of Communication. I'm like, I don't even care who's next. It doesn't even matter what it is.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And then you heard.
And I'm like, ah, it's different. So I couldn't give you any part of the song because I hit skip because I was like, nah, I can't listen to that.
I got to join the club here. The great part, too, in Lack of, time passes, you're one, we have a reason. The back off, like you said, one of the most iconic moments of that era. And also, too, I always notice this, and maybe I'm the only one, but lack of communication almost seems like Rat's response to Communication Breakdown by Led Zeppelin. It's very similar style. I don't know if they maybe thought of that as they were writing it, but just a great, great tune. And nothing to even complain about. It's one of the classics, and it's even one of those ones that at the beginning of the song, you almost hear like a chord getting plugged in.
Yes, I love that. I love those kinds of effects.
Yeah, that's just killer shit, man. What a great way to start side two, and what a terrible way to start side two for Invasion of Your Privacy, for sure. And then we go to, in my opinion, the most underrated song on Out of the Cellar, which is Back for More, which goes up against What You Give Is What You Get. It's funny because before you guys came on, I don't know if you were able to see it or hear it, but I put on some Rat videos just kind of. And Back for More, the video came on, which starring Tawny Kitaen, which I didn't remember, and the cameos by Nikki Sixx and Tommy Lee, which I did remember. That video was so hard to find back in 85 when all you had was Friday Night Videos or City Vision in Winnipeg. Like, they never played that. And one kid taped it, like, in the middle of the night when he found it on the TV somewhere. But he only got, the first half. So we never actually saw it. There's no video for Back for More. There is. I got it. You know, George Schlotsky's got it. Bullshit. Hey, Schlotsky. And he's got half of it. Like, oh, my God, this exists. But back then, you couldn't find it anywhere else if you couldn't see it on TV, you know?
Yep. You forgot another cameo by Milton Berle.
Is he in that one too?
Remember at the end, the motorcycle idiot comes. He takes off the helmet and he's got like a missing tooth and shit.
Yeah. Of course he does.
There you go. Milton Berle.
And you know, once again, since I've been talking so much about it, What You Give Is What You Get is a pretty catchy chorus, but it's not up to snuff with Back For More, which to me, had there not been so many great songs on this album, it would have been a single, although apparently was a video. But I don't remember Rat ever getting any airplay besides Round and Round anyways. Maybe Lay It Down. But this one is totally made for radio and just a great, great, great tune. So Back For More for me.
So for me, this What You Give Is What You Get, it sounds like an Ace song, right? I heard Ace singing it in my head.
Good call.
It's got the same lyric, the same phrasing, right? It's okay. Against, you got the ballad to Bombastic. You got Tawny in a black bra with a poodle skirt.
Awesome.
Come on, right? And then just everything about Back For More is just so perfect. From the video to the solos to the songwriting to the singing, this was a landslide for me. Back For More all the way.
The pre-chorus for What You Give For What You Get is pretty cool too. I like that. But, you know, like I'm trying to think of positives about that. I keep holding on through the night. But not even close to Back For More. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, What You Give is probably the first song that I would really consider like just like filler. Like there's really not a, there's not a lot there. And I haven't mentioned this yet, but one of my big problems with the Invasion album, as opposed to the Out of the Cellar album, the choruses on the Invasion songs are, for the most part, they're not there. Almost every song on Out of the Cellar has a catchy chorus or a sing-along chorus. Like this one is just, but enough about that. Going back to more. I said earlier that In Your Direction is probably my favorite Rat song, but if I can say this, I would say that Back For More might be their greatest achievement. And Sonny, you said it's like the perfect, like,
would you say, Sonny, ballad to Bombastic?
Ballad to Bombastic.
The way it opens up with that acoustic, and then you get the and then when it kicks into gear, it's like, oh, this is why I'm listening to Rat right now.
And what a funky riff too. Bow, 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 down, down. It's great.
And I love it. And it's similar to what they do with Within Your Direction, which is why I love it. During the verses, the song is a little different. And then it kicks back into gear with that riff for the chorus. And it does it again on Back For More. And I love it. Landslide, Back For More.
Zeus?
It's a lot closer than you think, at least for me. I mean, look, Back For More is legendary. It is awesome. It is an achievement. You can't take it away, okay? But I feel bad for What You Give Is What You Get. It goes up to it. It is so cheesy bad that it works for me. It is so stupid and like it takes Paul Stanley's like, okay, verse, chorus, verse, you know, like how to write a song. I don't give a shit what the verse is, just get me to that chorus. I have to sing that chorus, and that's all this song comes out down to. Like they could have just been blah 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 because it's so easy to forget.
Yeah.
He just was dying to say that, and it's just I don't know. I just feel bad for it going up because I like it. It's just one of those. It's got a pretty cool riff. It's one of those. I will tell you, my 12-year-old in the car. If I start going right now, she walks by and I say, "Cause it's so," and she'll say, "Cause what you give it, what you knows it. It's in her head. It stayed there." And there's another one that's like that. But this is part of the trifecta of side two on Invasion. This and two more that come up, those choruses, and they just stick with you. But yeah, I'm not going to be stupid. Back For More is way better.
Last note on It's So Easy to Forget, What You Give, What You Get. When this album came out in 85, my friend Carrie Lalonde moved away to Vancouver, and we went to visit my aunt. I went and hung out with him one night, and I remember he kept singing that, "It's so easy to forget. You got the new Rat album, man. What you give is what, that new Rat album's killer, man. It's so easy to," he kept saying it over and over again. So whenever I think of that song, I think of Carrie Lalonde. I don't know where you are, Carrie, but if you're watching.
Yeah. But that's just it. It's that stupid chorus. It stays with you.
All right. Now we got The Morning After versus Got Me on the Line. And Zeus, you're on a roll talking about your three. So continue on.
All right. So I will say, for me, this is my favorite deep cut from Rat.
And which that's is?
The Morning After.
Oh, okay.
I love this song. I love when the song, it's got a galloping sound. If you listen to it and you listen to The Oath from Kisses on the Elder, you're like, oh, that first beginning galloping kind of guitar coming in, very similar. And I just think the lyrics, know what, and he keeps repeating, know what I mean. He says it all the time, right? But he repeats it a couple times in this song. And he actually says, lift your skirt, lady, high in the night. Come on.
Poetry, baby.
Yeah. And the one thing I will say, Got Me on the Line, to me, that's kind of a filler. That is the least masculine way I've ever heard a man answer the phone.
Hello?
What the is that? Who is that? Hello?
First of all, sound effects in a Rat song just stop right off the bat with a goddamn phone ringing, dude.
Who the f*** answers the phone? Hello?
It's squeaky. Yeah, exactly.
Awful.
Tom, you seem to be agreeing with your cohort there.
I'm much closer than Zeus feels. I actually think Got Me on the Line. So to me, this begins the trifecta of where Invasion kind of shifts gears for me, because starting with Got Me on the Line, the rest of the album is very pop metally, where I didn't see that a lot in the earlier album. It's and we'll get into that as we talk about some of the other songs. I think Got Me on the Line, I think it's a very cool song. I think it's really got an upbeat pop metal sound to it that the rest of the album doesn't really have. But that being said, The Morning After, the riff and Bobby's drumming is just insane. He is a beast on that song. And between the riff again and Bobby's drums, usually I don't like really fast, kind of like aggressive Rat songs, but this one I'm going to give the exception to. But that being said, I think Got Me on the Line is kind of a cool tune. I like it a bit more than Zeus, but I'm going with The Morning After here.
I'll jump in here and be the devil's advocate. I always love that. And it's kind of reminds me of Jeff Tate in Operation Mindcrime. Bling, hello, down, bump, and it's this, like you said, like the phone is answered and the riff starts, and I really, really dig The Morning After. I thought was okay, but to me, it seems like song number 10, and it's not; it's song number 8. And I was like, I like the part that goes, "Gonna be right out of the night." That's cool, but I just love that. Got me on the line, ready for love night or whatever it is, or ready for the night or whatever. I think that you're right, Tom, and that is poppy, but it's a little bit, it has, I'm not a guitar player, but it would seem to be they're using minor chords than majors keys on that, because it's a little bit darker, ready for love or whatever it is. So I'm going with got me on the line. Yeah. Sonny?
So Zeus mentioned it earlier about lyrics. So The Morning After, right? The lyrics go, I'll be heading out in time. If it's wrong or right, I'll leave The Morning After. I thought he said, I'll be heading out in time if it's all right, like he was looking for permission. Right? I didn't know it was wrong or right. I've been thinking the wrong damn line for, what, 26, 40 years? Something like that. I don't even know. And then I don't know if you noticed on Got Me on a Line, there's a Home Sweet Home line in there, really?
Yeah.
A year after it's a huge hit.
What it's doing?
And Got Me on a Line, there's a part of the lyric says Home Sweet Home.
Oh, really? I didn't know
that. Yeah. Yep. I'm all like, really? That's kind of cheesy a little bit.
But don't you remember at the end, though, when he goes, nobody hangs up on me?
Yeah. I would have hung up when I got the hello. I would have hung up right there. I actually, on Got Me on a Line, I like the verses better. I like the pre-chorus better than The Morning After. I don't like the chorus better. That being said, I think I am going to go with Got Me on a Line, because it was 50-50 with me anyway. And The Morning After, to me, is the weakest track on out of the
song. Oh, ooh. See, that's why I put Jericho and Sonny on top and Zeus and Tom on the bottom.
All right. Okay.
Oh. All right. We're getting ready to wind down here as we get to track 9. I'm Insane, which is a Crosby only, versus You Should Know By Now, Crosby, Piercy, Cruce. You want to start with that, Sonny?
Yeah, this one was a landslide for me. I don't like anything about You Should Know By Now. Not one thing. Not one solitary thing. Not even the hand claps that you might have missed that are at time step 220 if you want to know where the hell it is. I'm Insane is awesome. Everything about the pace, the melody, the guitar solo, one of Rat's fastest songs, man, it is written really, really well. I'm going with I'm Insane.
What do you think, Zeus?
This is probably the closest matchup for me, but this is number two on that trifecta of choruses. You should know. I can stop right now, wake up my 12-year-old and go, hey, you should. And she'll go, no, by now. And she'll probably fist pump in the air to this song like everybody does. The chorus is so catchy that it has to take over for I'm Insane. I like I'm Insane. It's a fast riff. You know what? I think this would work perfect for side two on Animalize.
Wow. Right? I said the exact same thing. It reminded me a little bit of Rat's version of Under the Gun.
Yeah, it's like it sounds like it would fit in there in that Mark St. John kind of move. And it has a very very rare third verse.
Yes.
Which you don't hear on Rat now, right? They just want to get you to the chorus, right? So this is the one I think that I'm Insane. It's a very good song, but Paul Stanley must be ripping out his hair. Like, how come I didn't come up with You Should Know? Like, this, my blood is thicker than water. How many times do me and you say that to each other, Tom? I love this song. It's kind of like a favorite deep cut of Shout It Out Loudcast, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, look. You Should Know By Now, the way the song starts, again, like I said about Got Me on the Line, it's very pop metal-y. It could almost be, you know, like a Def Leppard or a Bon Jovi song. It's very different, a song that would not have fit on Out of the Cellar. I think it's just extremely catchy. When all the music drops out and you got just the drum and it's like, you should know. I mean, other than Whitesnake's Slow and Easy, it's probably the best version of just stop everything and just clap along as cheesy as you want to be in the 80s. I'm not going to try to convince you that it's a great song. I think it's a fun song with a catchy chorus, and it beats out I'm Insane for me. So I'm going with You Should Know By Now.
I agree. You Should Know By Now. It has that with the hand claps in the background and all that sort of thing. It is the tune for me, especially over You're Insane. I find my trifecta on Out of the Cellar that's not as good as the last three. And I just think that You Should Know By Now. It's like you said, it's catchy. It's cool. And it's very breezy, and it fits kind of a summer song, which is what it is. So, and then we get to the final, Scene of the Crime versus Dangerous But Worth the Risk. Sonny?
Dangerous, Worth the Risk. I think what Warren and Robin are doing in this song is awesome. And there is some catchiness to it. There is no doubt. Scene of the Crime, the groove, the pace, the melody, the drum fills. You kind of get that kind of like The Who does it a lot. It has kind of that epic feel in a song every once in a while. And I just love that the chorus is so unique, that little call and answer thing. I got to go with Scene of the Crime the whole way.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I was listening to Scene of the Crime yesterday, like I said, kind of prepping for this. It's a long song for Rat and for this record in the fact that it's almost 5 minutes long. And so to me, I wanted to really delve into it because most Rats are 3:30, 3:40, 4 minutes at tops. I'm not going to ever say that Rat is proggy. It's not. But there's a lot of sections to this song, and it really does build as I mentioned that the morning after seemed like a song 10, which is more of a throwaway, you know, just, oh, here, put it on at the end of the song, at the end of the record. This one has some thought to it as to why it's the last song on the record, because it's built very well. It starts with kind of a little intro, like Sonny mentioned. And then, I just really dig the chorus of that. Cold-hearted bitch running out on me. Like, that's what Zeus said earlier, or maybe it was Tom. I don't remember. Like, you're actually, like, feel that Steven's yelling at this chick. You broke the law in the first degree, cold-hearted bitch. And he's not saying, like, bitch. He just has a little bit of a snarl to bitch. And I always remember that even as a 14-year-old kid going, yeah, man, she is a bitch, whoever this chick is, you know? So, you know, I'm going with the scene of the crime. And once again, Dangerous is Worth the Risk. That is, to me, the epitome of a song 10. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We need to put it on. Song 10, great. But Scene of the Crime has a little bit of thought to it and a little bit of more of a cool factor. So I'm going with that one.
Gut me a weapon, a loaded gun, I'll track you down. Now, again, these are more lyrics where I'm a little bit intimidated by Steven right now because I think he might really have a friggin' loaded weapon right now.
Yeah.
Look, I love this was, I'll be honest with you, this was the only matchup, because most of these matchups were pretty easy for me. This was the only matchup, even until we started tonight, very difficult for me because I like both of these songs for completely different reasons. Okay. I think Dangerous But Worth the Risk. When I hear the beginning of that song, it almost sounds like a song that if it was re-recorded, it could have been like a Hysteria era Def Leppard type tune. The way it kicks into gear, again, I've said it before with some of these other songs, it's a little bit more glammy and poppy than what we've heard on Invasion and certainly what we've heard on Out of the Cellar. But Scene of the Crime, the tempo, I love that tempo, kind of like Round and Round. In the guitars, it's kind of like it's a great riff, but it's not an aggressive staccato type riff. It's kind of like a breezy little riff that kind of keeps the song going. And like Sonny said, with the call and answer, you know, kind of like doing their best kind of Van Halen impersonation with the you know, you've been caught. And of course the lyrics, you know, cold blooded bitch and all that stuff. Scene of the Crime for me.
Zeus, take it on home, baby.
All right. So Dangerous But Worth the Risk. That's the third, the trifecta of the chorus classics for me. Dangerous But Worth the Risk. You should know by now. And what you give is what you get. Your life is not threatened, but your loving is. Settle down. You ain't threatening anything. But let's get to Scene of the Crime. One of my favorite Rat songs. The buildup is great.
Yes.
And there's something I can't, it's the lawyer in me. I can't let it go. I came by your house, but you weren't at home. Well, I knocked on your door. I thought you just said she wasn't home. Why is he knocking on her door?
And then he knocked on the door first.
Well, then change the lyrics.
It doesn't rhyme.
Yeah. But he hears her, and she's begging for more. You broke the law, you see, and that's a felony. Now, I don't know. I'm pretty sure that cheating on Steven Piercy is not what you would call a felony.
In his world,
I'm sorry, misdemeanor doesn't rhyme.
Yeah, it's just, but the song kicks ass. The buildup, the cold-blooded bitch going out on me. Again, there's no woman that does him right in any of the Rat songs. They're all assholes, bitches. They treat him like shit. They're not to be trusted.
You know why? Because he dared her to rock.
Yeah,
and he wanted to rock, and she dared to roll. That's got the tone right there. You cold hearted bitch.
But it's a great song. I'm with Scene of the Crime.
Nice.
Once again, when you do the classic album clash, I always love doing the song by song debates because a lot of times you really get more of a sense. Like, oh yeah, it's Out of the Cellar easy, and then we get into it and you realize that it's not quite that cut and dry. And there was a couple songs here that I actually changed my mind as we were talking. So, I mean, now we get down to it. As an album, which one do you like better? And it's always hard because, like I said, they're both very close to 10 out of 10s. Jeez. I mean, I can't go against Out of the Cellar, but I will say this. I really enjoyed revisiting Invasion because I find that because Out of the Cellar is such a monster that you kind of forget that Invasion is a pretty good, you know, follow-up. It's Godfather 2 and Godfather 1. You know, it's Empire Strikes Back and Star Wars. They're both pretty cool. I think Out of the Cellar might get the edge just because it is the more classic, iconic record. But in a lot of ways, and I'll go on this side, just devil's advocate, Invasion of Your Privacy is my favorite as of here tonight, right here, right now.
Wow. Okay.
Tom?
Yeah, for me, this was, I mean, look, out of 10 songs, I only picked one off of Invasion.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that wasn't even like.
The other two guys count up how many you chose from each either. But Tom, go ahead.
Yeah. So I only picked one off of Invasion, but that doesn't necessarily reflect the album because you go and match up my matchup. But that being said, look, Out of the Cellar, preparing for this and listen to these albums. I mean, I listen to these albums regularly anyways, but I was surprised that I knew that Out of a Cellar is the monster that it is. But I got to be honest with you, spending a little extra time with Invasion, I thought it was better than it was. I have, right. I had an image of Invasion being just a notch below Out of a Cellar. And after spending some extra time with it, it's to me, it's a couple of more notches below Out of the Cell than I originally remember. I think, like I said earlier, I think a lot of these songs have really weak choruses, which for me, this kind of era of music, I love a good chorus. I think a lot of the songs have a weak chorus. Out of the Cellar, it carries it. I think the production, and I mentioned Warren's tone on Out of the Cellar, carries it for me. More memorable songs. Invasion, it's a great album, but you're comparing it to a monster to me. So I'm going Out of the Cellar.
All right. Sonny?
Yeah, I was 8 out of 10 on Out of the Cellar. The track by track is totally different.
Like, it is.
It's so weird to do it this way because you don't normally do it this way.
That's why it's the classic album clash, Boonie. Play along.
That's right. So Out of the Cellar, I go to often. I listen to it often. When I listen to Invasion, when I'm done with Invasion, I'm like, oh, that was good. It's not Out of the Cellar.
Yeah.
Right? That's where I end up going back to. And to me, pound for pound, there's better songs on Out of the Cellar than there is on Invasion of Your Privacy. Although there's a couple of songs that I would take off Invasion, put on Out of the Cellar, and Out of the Cellar would be a desert island album for me if that was the case, right?
So yeah.
Some great songs on both, but yeah, Out of the Cellar for me also.
So Tom, you said you were 9-1?
Yes.
And Sonny, you were 8-2?
Yeah.
I was 5-5, so I had the tie there, yeah.
Okay, okay.
Zeus, what did you have?
All right, I had 6 for Out of the Cellar and 4. Now, one of the things I also did is, what would I change? If I had 10 songs to pick, and I'm going on vacation, and I can only pick 10 songs from both these albums, where would I go? If they weren't going head-to-head, I still would have gone 6-4. Hmm. Same way. So, slightly Out of the Cellar, but this is right there. Invasion's right there. It is a kick-ass. And to be honest with you, I'm probably more apt to listen to this now just out of fatigue factor of Out of the Cellar that I'd be like, oh, let me hear this album. I haven't heard it in a while. But slightly Out of the Cellar is better. Great, great 1-2 punch, though, for them.
Chris, I was just going to say, in Rat's most recent tour that I saw, their set list really doesn't change. But even they agree that Out of the Cellar, because their set list, they play 6 from Out of the Cellar and 3 from Invasion.
Well, and that's the thing that I was going to mention before, too, is that Out of the Cellar did 3 million sales and Invasion did 2 million. So obviously, so they're both very big hit albums, like you said. And I find they rely more on the Out of the Cellar. But like I said, like for me, I chose You're in Love, Never Use Love, Closer to My Heart, Got Me on the Line, and what else did I choose? You Should Know by Now. So there's my 5. And I would love to see them play a couple of those. But once again, I've only seen Rat like once anyways, maybe twice. I think they toured with Poison a few years ago. But and they're supposed to be in the Kiss Cruise that we're all supposed to be.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and that was one of the things that I had on my kind of list. Where like, well, I have my own cruise, you know. If you want me on, I get a couple extra things. And one of the things was I wanted to do a couple of Talk Is Jericho's, and I wanted to do one with Steven and Juan.
Nice.
Do like a Rat podcast. So
yes.
So once again, I think Rat's one of those bands for all of us, much respect. Maybe we didn't follow their whole careers like we did with certain bands that we love, but I can never deny the fact that for a certain point in time, Rat was pretty huge and they're pretty rad. So it was fun to discuss these two records about them.
Absolutely. And look, when you get 4 people like us that are like music nerds, Rat nerds, and breaking down, what's better than sitting here and breaking down like the classic albums? I mean, this is what we love to do. And I you know, it was a great time. I'm thrilled to finally be part of a classic album clash with a band like Rat. It's just it's a blast. And I could keep going, but it's great stuff.
One thing I want you to make sure you tell Stephen Piercy about Sonny Pooney and what he said about giving yourself away when you
I'll tell him myself. I don't no problem with it.
Yeah, be careful.
Let me tell you what I said.
Sonny, be careful. Be careful because he's got himself a weapon,
a loaded gun.
All right, so watch it.
You know what, Sonny? You know what's going to happen if you tell him that? He's saying,
cold-hearted bitch running out on me.
He's going to think about you.
Or he'll just be like, you're in trouble.
Guys, what a great time it was. And we'll have to think of another band, another couple records to do this with. It was a lot of fun. And finally, great to meet you face-to-face, Sonny Poonie, you piece of shit.
I love you, TJ. I love you.
Good night, guys. Thank you so much.